push something like alcohol in every football telecast. You know, go out and get pissed. You can't enjoy the game unless you're rockin' pissed. That's Looney Tunes. But yet we support that. And we throw lots of money at people like Coors so that they can back right-wing politicians. You know, you got to think about this stuff. And I just really think that we need to, we need to grow up on this subject. We need to be adults and say this is a resource. This is a resource. This is a raw material. And we need to find a way to get around the moneyed interests. That's the hard part. That is the absolute hard part. And as Nanette says in the chat room, booze is a killer, a family destroyer. And it's absolutely right. It destroyed my family. I mean, as a kid, my dad was an alcoholic. He was a horrible alcoholic. A violent one, in fact. So why do we push that so hard and we make illegal and you know, turn into this taboo villain a plant? I don't get it. But anyway, we're going to wrap it up for tonight, and I will check into all of this stuff regarding the mountaintop removal and whether or not hemp is an option, because I think Nanette brings up a really, really good question. It's an excellent question. I think we should find out about this. So, we're out of here, folks. Bob Kincaid, thanks for producing. Ben Burt at the White Rose Society. Scott Barry of Beeld One Louder Productions. Thank you very much. As we say here, I'm Foxed Up. Be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
I would tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Pakistan being given 10 days to lift current martial law or face suspension from a 53-nation bloc. Foreign ministers put out the warning in light of continuing emergency rule in Pakistan. Former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto placed again under house arrest for the second time in 4 days. She's being kept from leading tomorrow's 185-mile procession in protest of current martial law. President Musharraf promises that general elections will be held by January 9th, but that the state of emergency imposed 1 week ago will stay in place till then. Hamas police killing 7 people in Gaza City during a huge political rally to commemorate the death of Yasser Arafat. Another 130 people were wounded. There's a growing humanitarian crisis in Somalia. Over the last 24 hours, residents fled the capital city of Mogadishu as government forces increased efforts to crush Islamist-led insurgents. Aid workers say at least 70 people have been killed during more than 1 week of intense fighting, bringing the total number of displaced Somalians to 850,000. The U.S. military is reversing the troop surge in Iraq. Commanders are waiting to see if the recent drop in violence will hold. 20 combat brigades have shrunk to 19 in the volatile Diyala province. The White House is under federal court order to preserve copies of its email messages in response to a pair of lawsuits brought by 2 private citizens groups. The U.S. Justice Department asked that the courts accept a White House promise to save all future backup tapes, but U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy decided that was not enough. As the Roman Catholic Church in the U.S. attempts to overcome a damaging scandal involving pedophile priests, Pope Benedict XVI makes a visit to America next April. He'll visit Washington, D.C. and New York City, including an address to the United Nations. It's the first planned papal visit to the U.S. since 1999. and Republican presidential candidate Fred Thompson is being endorsed by an anti-abortion group, which could increase his support among conservative voters. The National Right to Life Committee plans to make the announcement later this evening. Thompson's election committee, though, has declined to confirm the endorsement right now. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check science and business news just ahead.
PM Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
In Valencia, Spain, a meeting today of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, co-winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. The group is compiling a summary of three comprehensive reports on global warming. Former Vice President Al Gore is now an official venture capitalist. The 2000 Nobel Peace Prize winner today, joining Silicon Valley's top venture capital group, Kleiner Perkins, as the company heads into the competitive world of, quote, clean technology. It is the largest order in the history of European aircraft maker Airbus. Dubai placing an order yesterday for more than $20 billion worth of aircraft, including 11 super jumbo jets, the A380s. The U.S. trade deficit fell to $56.5 billion in September, its lowest level in more than 2 years. The plunging value of the U.S. dollar has increased American exports. Asian markets fell steeply today on continued concerns about the U.S. credit crisis, Japan's Nikkei average hitting its biggest low of the year. Light sweet crude trading at $94.62 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold at $807.70 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 55 points to end at 12,987. NASDAQ down 43. S&P 500 off 14. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 69 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Please stop by the headonradionetwork.com site, and you'll find a PayPal button there, and you can help us keep the stream on the air and the servers serving and the packets passing and the lights flashing. We appreciate your help. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Monday, November the 12th. So if you're listening at about 9 p.m. Eastern Time, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to phone in and talk to myself or my guest, who I will be introducing later. Our guest will be joining us at 9:30 p.m. I'll tell you a little bit about him in just a moment. The telephone numbers are 877, the number 4, Head On. That's 877, the number 4, Head On, or if you have a limited long distance, please use 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia, and I'd normally try to check email during the breaks. The address is peter@headonradionetwork.com. That's peter@headonradionetwork.com. You'll find the website at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You'll find links there to the guests and to the guests' websites, as well as to the audio archives from past shows. These are links that are hosted by White Rose Society, without which we could not do this network at all. Ben Birch, as Bob says, is the hardest working man in radio. You'll find links from strictlyconfidentialradio.com to the archives, as well as to the chat room, which is active as we speak. Our good friend Joe Vecchio, whose show airs after this at 11 p.m., who does Nighttime Cup of Joe, often lists off the folks in the chat room, and I decided it's a pretty good idea. We have B.J. Goodmundson, as close as I could come. Of course, we have Bob Kincaid and Cobwebs and Sue and Gene and James B. and Jersey and John Fox and Mr. Lottergy himself. We have On the Road and moi, Peter Godbold. We have Danette and Ralphs and Randy D. and Toulouse-Lautrec. You really should check out the chat room if you have not done that at this point in time. I realize if you're listening to this show via archive or delayed stream, you can't do that, but you are, in fact, a welcome listener to this show also. But if you are listening live, you are missing a good part of the show by not going to the chat room. You'll find the link to the chat room at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. It's there on the homepage. You'll find links there to the Head On Radio Network main site. You can find out about all of the other progressive programs and Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and the links to help you locate the music on the show. As Bob was saying earlier, this is, in fact, Veterans Day weekend. And as you know, on Veterans Day weekend, there's a huge Veterans Parade in New York City. We are going to be contacting Denny Meyer later this week. Denny Meyer has been a guest on the show. Denny Meyer, wonderful guest. We loved him. He represents American Veterans for Equal Rights and also the Gay Military Times. He has incredible stories to tell. Denny is extremely active in the New York Veterans Parade regarding the LGBT contingent, and he always has wonderful stories to tell. Denny goes into collapse mode immediately after the parade. Sunday and Monday is more than busy for Denny. So hopefully we'll be able to get him on maybe Saturday, or rather Friday. There's no guest scheduled for Friday at this point. This is a interesting week on Strictly Confidential. I'm glad you can be with us tonight. At 9:30, Dennis Dyson of the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund will join us. If you recall, in the past, we've had several candidates from the Victory Fund who have been on the show. Kevin Beckner, a Hillsborough County Commission in Florida. We had, that was in July. In August, we had Jeff Anderson, who ran for Duluth County City Council at Large, Duluth City Council at Large. In August, we had Fred Mason, who ran for Baltimore City Council. Only a few days ago, we had Howard Bayless, who was one of the first openly gay men to be elected to public office. We'll have more folks who are represented by Victory Fund also, who have been candidates around the country and have been elected or are very close to being elected. But I thought it was a good idea for you tonight to hear from straight from the horse's mouth regarding the Victory Fund and what's that about and how does it help LGBT folks attain public office. And, if we don't do it for ourselves, nobody is going to do it for us. So, then tomorrow night, it should be a great show, we have Peter Toscano and Christine Bake. They are of the Beyond X Gay movement or site. They are a collection of many people who have been through the whole ex-gay therapy sessions, Exodus and the others like those, who spent thousands of dollars and their time, and they survived, so we'll be hearing from them. That will be tomorrow. Wednesday night, we have Jeremy Davis. He's the technical guru of the Blerico Project, which is one of the better gay blogs, the LGBT blogs, and we'll be talking with him about ways to use technology to get our message out. Jeremy is indeed a technical guru. Thursday night, we have Dr. Gates. Now, Dr. Gates is a senior research fellow with the Williams Institute on Sexual Orientation, Law, and Public Policy. This should be an interesting guest. He is the guest, by the way, who has just compiled the statistics that we quoted the other evening. Example, Alabama has grown in terms of same-sex couples by over 800%. We'll be certainly curious about those numbers. Dr. Gates is also the co-author of the Gay and Lesbian Atlas. And so that will be coming up Thursday, and as I say, Friday is not booked, but I think we're going to try and get Denny on the phone to tell us about the New York parade. Oh my, there's so much. You know, the guest is at 9:30, but and I have no idea where to begin. There's so many things I want to tell you about. You know, Bob's guest earlier, one of Bob's guests was talking about the fact that that Obama wears different faces for different people. That being the case, I think I may just start with the Obama story. As you recall, we've been talking about the fact that Obama had McClurkin, the African-American ex-gay Christian singer, at his rally. I believe that was South Carolina or North Carolina, I don't recall which. It's probably in the article, I just don't recall. But in any case, that was, you know, Obama wasn't even there. He appeared on a big screen television set. But the truth of the matter is that Donnie McClurkin was much more than just a singer. He was actually the master of ceremonies and spoke throughout the event and did a whole ex-gay testimony and the whole bit. And there was lots of outrage from the LGBT community about that, considering Obama's stance of support for the LGBT community, and it seemed to contradict. Nonetheless, they went ahead and left Donnie McClurkin in the show, and to counterbalance him, they put on a white Christian minister who was supposed to be gay-friendly, but they put him on at the very beginning of the show to be in invocation, to an opening prayer, an opening statement. He did this before the venue was even filled up. People were still trying to find their chairs. About half the people were probably there. So not many people even knew that. But he has written a response. He wrote this for the Bellerico Project, and it is interesting. I'll read it to you. He says, over the last several weeks, the question of GLBT equality was placed on center stage by the appearance of Donnie McClurkin at one of my campaign events. McClurkin is a talented performer and a beloved figure among many African Americans and Christians around the country. At the same time, he espouses beliefs about homosexuality that I completely reject. The events of the last several weeks are not the occasion that I would have chosen to discuss America's divisions on gay rights and my own deep commitment to GLBT equality. Now that the issue is before us, though, I do not intend to run away from it. These events have provided an important opportunity for us to confront a difficult fact. And he states this fact, that there are good, decent, moral people in this country who do not yet embrace their brothers and sisters as full members of our shared community. As you know, we do have to have diplomats and politicians to try to reach out to those people. As far as I'm concerned, the folks who do not embrace their gay brothers and sisters, meaning they hate us, are not good, decent, and moral, but nonetheless I understand the tone he is using and why he is using it. We will not secure full equality for all GLBT Americans until we learn how to address that deep disagreement and move beyond it. I don't know if it's so much of a disagreement as it is just pure plain ignorance, but nonetheless, I understand the reason for him using the word. To achieve that goal, we must state our beliefs boldly, bring the message of equality to audiences that have not yet accepted them, and listen to what those audiences have to say in return. This doesn't seem to jive with having an ex-gay, you know, the you can change, you know, the lifestyle is evil. A fellow who ran his campaign event, but nonetheless, that's what he says. For my entire public career, I brought the message of GLBT equality to skeptical audiences as well as friendly ones. No other leading candidate in the race for presidency has demonstrated the same commitment to the principle of full equality. Note that he used the word leading candidate. That way he could leave out Kucinich. I support the full and unqualified repeal of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. It should not have been a part of the law. Anyway, I'm summarizing now. I believe we should get rid of it altogether. Law should not discriminate against gay and lesbian couples. I'll fight to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Shouldn't have been passed anyway. And he'll work with the Defense Department. He's also, if he's president, he'll also use the presidency as a bully pulpit to urge states to treat same-sex couples with full equality, but still stands by letting the states decide on their own. That sounds like a nightmarish hodgepodge. He does make a great close, though. The American people have been poorly served, that was kind, poorly served by two terms of administration that seeks to manipulate us through our fear, and fear over national security, fear over immigrants, fear over gay and lesbian couples and loving relationships. Americans are yearning for leadership that will put an end to fear-mongering and instead empower us to once again reach for America. And, you know, this is an inspiring... You recall his speech at the 2004 Democratic Convention, how inspiring that was. The closing paragraph is reminiscent of that. And he is, in fact, correct, manipulating through fear. In fact, I have... this came in late this afternoon... couple of audio clips. You just got to hear this. This Tancredo nutcase, Pam at Pam's house, blend likes to refer to the whole scenario as the GOP clown car, which I think is very funny. Toot toot. And she points out that Tancredo is certainly a certifiable occupant of this car. But in any case, I'm going to ask you to listen to, you know, we're following this from the strange echo. I'll deal with it here in a second. I'll try to anyway. It's one of those echoes that just times. Okay, that went away. Thank you. And so, in any case, the Tancredo guy is talking about fear. Well, you got to hear this. This is the current Tancredo ad that he's trying to freak the people of Iowa out with. Bob, please run the clip called Tancredo.
According to FBI reports, Al-Qaeda may be planning to strike at shopping malls here in America later this year. And the candidates for president are talking about health care and energy policy? I'm Tom Tancredo, and I say all issues pale in comparison to the fact that Islamic jihadists are here and plotting our destruction. It's time for real leadership in Washington. I will secure our borders and ports. I will stop all visas to nations that sponsor terrorism and arrest and deport any alien who preaches violence and hatred, whether that's in coming from a mosque or a street corner in a May Day parade. I'll prosecute those who provide sanctuary to anyone who would harm us, deport all those who do not belong here, and put the military on the border if necessary to keep them from coming back. Leadership is about more than taking action after an attack. It's about doing everything in your power to stop it. And I mean everything. This is Tom Tancredo, and I approve this ad because someone has to say it.
Paid for by Tancredo for a secure America. Call 1-888-GO-TOM-08 and ask for Rachel.
It's about doing everything in your power to stop it. Those brown people coming over the borders, and he says emphatically, and I mean everything, which includes, of course, taking away every one of your civil rights. Yes, Mr. Obama, the fear factor is still in play in this country, and it gets worse. Tancredo is not only currently running that radio commercial in Iowa, he's now running a television ad in Iowa. Please run that Tancredo TV, please.
Hi, I'm Tom Tancredo, and I approve this message because someone needs to say it.
There are consequences to open borders beyond the 20 million aliens who've come to take our jobs. Islamic terrorists now freely roam U.S. soil. Jihadists who froth with hate here to do as they have in London, Spain, Russia. The price we pay for spineless politicians who refuse to defend our borders against those who come to kill.
Amazing, isn't it? I'm sure that will go over very well with the Condoleezza Rice crowd and... with the Mann Coulter crowd, and it's right up their alley. You got to have that. Can you believe they're still trying to sell that stuff? You know, hike up your skirt, honey, and go sell in the street corner. We're all stocked up on that sort of thing here. He says, I say all issues pale in comparison, and blah, blah, blah. A very astute reader in this particular blog points out, I say all issues pale in comparison to the fact that the fundamentalist Christians are plotting to take over our country. And I couldn't agree with that listener more. Just amazes me. That's the latest. That just came in from you poor folks in Iowa are having to hear stuff like that on your television sets. And to make it even more interesting, Stormfront.org has endorsed Ron Paul. Do you remember when Ron Paul first announced? I think just about everybody in the country got an email. And, you know, his plan sounded pretty good until you got down to the you know, Republican part. But in any case, he's certainly showing his colors. Now, Stormfront.org is a white supremacy group. And not only does Stormfront.org endorse him, but also the White World News. I'm dreaming of a white world. Mm-hmm. They have actively supported Paul's bid for presidency, including offering the PayPal buttons to donate to his site. Stormfront.org is saying, once in a great while, a presidential candidate is presented to us. You know, that this makes me want to read it, is presented unto us once in a great while. A candidate who not only speaks for us, and this is white supremacists talking, but for us. I'm supporting Ron Paul in his run for presidency. The endorsement praises Paul's plan to reduce taxes, close the borders, and eliminate trade deals such as NAFTA. you know, say what you mean. That's not the reason you're supporting. The site goes on to say, and I quote, whatever organization you belong to, remember first and foremost that you are white. Now, oh, Jesus. That you're a white nationalist. Put your differences with one another aside and work together. Yeah, right. Work together and strive to get someone in the Oval Office who agrees with much of what we want for our future. Look at that man. Look at the issues. Look at our values. Look at our politicians having sex in men's rooms. Vote for Ron Paul in 2008. And there is another site, Vanguard Network News, a neo-Nazi fellow there, a Todd Van Bibber, who was arrested and spent 5 years in a Florida prison for bombing or planning to bomb a dozen Orlando locations. Those were gay clubs and abortion clinics, as you might imagine. This site is also endorsing them. He's saying, I think I'm going to get in touch with the local Paul people and see if I can help. I'm serious about this shit. That's what he says. And ain't that America for you and me? You know, the reason that the white supremacists are so attracted to him goes back to some statements he made around 1992. It was a political newsletter. He says that opinion polls show that about 5% of blacks have sensible opinions. That's tantamount to saying 5% of women wear sensible shoes. But they have sensible opinions on the free market and individual liberty and the end of welfare. And then the next statement he made in 1992, we're constantly told that it is evil to be afraid of black men. No, no one is telling you that. Be afraid if you want to. It's your problem. It'll only hurt you. It's the hate that we don't like. But he claims we're constantly told that it is evil to be afraid of black men. It's hardly irrational, though. Black men commit murders and rapes and robberies of my and muggings and burglaries, all out of proportion to their numbers. And, of course, the homosexuals steal your children out of proportion to their numbers. Also, we are much like gypsies in that respect. All due respect and apologies to the gypsies. Ron Paul also said, we don't think a child of 13 should be held responsible as a man of 23. He says that's true for most people, but black males who have been raised to join criminal gangs are as big, strong, tough, scary, culpable as any adult, and they should be treated as such. Meaning, of course, that black 13-year-olds should go to the electric chair, and white 13-year-olds, when they get out of line, should, of course, go to the criminal justice system for children, you know, the kiddie system. He's not fond of Jews either. He's saying the most powerful lobby in Washington is the Israeli government. I thought that was us, though. It's hard to keep track. I could have sworn that we were the most powerful lobby in Washington and that we had all the money. But apparently that is not the case. Oh, yeah, I want to tell you this story. The only gay bar, the only one in Jerusalem, has now closed. They called it the Jalem. That was a slang name for it, J-L-E-N, the Jalem for Jerusalem Gay Bar. I operated for about 4 years. The real name is the Shushan Pub, and it was Jerusalem's only lesbian and gay bar. And it's an interesting fact that's pointed out here. Shushan is the only place in Israel where ultra-Orthodox Jews, Arabs, and religious secularists could sit together and have a good time. That is rather typical of gay bars and lesbian bars. You know, we have, you know, we're knocked over so many ways, and we're like weevils, we don't fall down. We're knocked over and beat up so many ways that, you know, little things like being an ultra-Orthodox Jew sitting next to an Arab doesn't mean that much anymore when you sit down in a club like that. Anyway, the owner, who also serves on the Jerusalem City Council, says that the people came and they enjoyed it, and when they left, they each returned to their own ghetto. It was clear that they were looking for a place where they could be themselves, and this is the only place they could find it other than staying home in their homes and coming out to this place. The bar was pretty much allowed to operate unhindered. There was arson a couple of years ago, and they rebuilt it. And when the gay pride parades come along, there are 8 extra police patrols. But he's saying that he's closing it because he's nearing 40 now, and he's has other interests. He probably just doesn't feel like putting up the pressure anymore. But one of the fellows who normally attended that his name is Adam. He was stabbed by one of the ultra-Orthodox types back in the 2005 parade. That's the LGBT Pride Parade. He says, I met my partner at this club. He says, it's warm and safe and friendly, and it's a haven, whereas Jerusalem is surrounded on all sides by hatred and venom and vitriol. So the safe spot, in fact, in Jerusalem is now gone, the only LGBT club. And that's a shame. But maybe they'll get another one soon. It's a shame to be relegated to bars and nightclubs, but, you know, that's a hell of a lot better than nothing, isn't it? So, as we come up on the break, you're listening to Strictly Confidential, a toll-free 877, the number 4, head-on. I am your host, Peter Godbold, streaming exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join us this Thursday on Foxed Up at his new time, 12 midnight, following nighttime Cup of Joe. We'll take a look at the king, Elvis Presley.
The first car I ever bought was the most beautiful car I've ever seen. It was secondhand, but I parked it outside of my hotel the day I got it. I sat up all night just looking at it.
Be there this Thursday on Foxed Up at his new time, 12 midnight, right here on the Head On Radio Network, and find out what happened to that car.
I say, oh, meet me in a hurry behind the bars. Don't you be afraid, and I'll do you no harm. I want you to bring along my rocking shoes, cause tonight I'm going to rock away.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Last year, one in five children was sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
And we're back for the second half hour of Strictly Confidential. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-443-2366. Or if you have unlimited long distance, you could use 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia and saves the studio a nickel or a buck. I do try to check email during the breaks. The mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. As I told you earlier, our guest is joining us now at the bottom of the hour. Our guest, we are very pleased to have, he's joining us actually in a very, very busy time. They are about to have their annual conference coming up, I believe, in less than 2 weeks. We'll certainly want to know about that and all the other things that are going on. We've had from the Victory Fund Kevin Beckner, Jeff Anderson, Fred Mason, and Howard Bayless in the past, who are all candidates who were assisted and coached by the Victory Fund, and it's, as I said earlier, time to hear straight from the horse's mouth. Dennis Dyson is the Vice President of Communication at the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, which is, of course, the nation's leading organization which identifies and trains openly LGBT and transgender candidates. Mr. Dyson spent 12 years at the Bureau of National Affairs, publisher of legal and regulatory news information. And most recently, he worked at Smart Brief, where he was the founding editor of Gay and Lesbian Leadership Smart Brief, a twice-weekly publication of the Gay and Lesbian Leadership Institute. And he is a graduate of the University of North Florida, which is in Jacksonville, Florida, just down the road from here. And he resides in Washington, D.C. Dennis, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy week and joining us.
Peter, thanks very much for having me. I'm glad to be on the show.
I'm glad to have you here, and you know, we've really enjoyed having the guests on that have come to us via the Victory Fund, or at least we located them on the Victory Fund. It would be impossible to locate these people without you. You know, these are many times local races or statewide races, so you know, doing this show from North Florida, Your site is immensely important to me, and thank you for doing what you do. Tell us, the conference is the big thing coming up. Maybe you'd like to start and tell us about the conference, and then we'll get into about the history of the Victory Fund.
Sure. You know, I was just listening to your show the other night with Howard Bayless of Birmingham, Alabama, who has just won his election. He was telling you a little bit about the conference, which is actually a program of the Leadership Institute, which is our kind of training and education arm. Every year, the conference brings together a few hundred, pardon me, I'm dealing with cold here, a few hundred openly gay elected and appointed officials from across the country. Last year, we held it in Houston, Texas, and this year it is in Las Vegas. It'll be our biggest conference ever. There's probably 300 people attending so far, and that's, again, it's coming up in a couple of weeks. But they'll get together for a couple of days of training and workshops and panels to talk about what openly gay elected and appointed officials are doing in their communities and how they can get legislation passed and stop some bad legislation. They talk about the political landscape for the coming year, a lot of policy panels and have you. It's actually a great conference, and it's a good time for these people to reconnect every year.
Well, I've looked over the results of the 2006 conference, and apparently, even though there are not as many people there, I think, around 200 or so were there in 06, you had some pretty impressive speakers there.
Yeah, and in last year we had Howard Dean, pardon me again, who was just coming off quite a big win in the 2006 midterm election. He came and spoke to us, and this was just a couple of weeks after the elections, so it was great to have him come and sort of crow a little bit. But he, at that conference, he called for more participation in politics by openly gay people, openly LGBT people, I should say. And there were a number of people of that stature there. This year we're going to have similarly some bright lights in the LGBT community, from everybody from Ambassador James Formel, who was the first openly gay ambassador in the U.S., to people like we've got some journalists coming who are openly gay to moderate some panels. Jonathan Capehart of the Washington Post, John Yang of NBC News. So it's a great collection of people that come together every year, and the conference is growing.
Well, it's very impressive. You know, we're talking about Howard a second ago. Howard had indicated to us that he went to the leadership training. What do you do? What do you teach the people? How do you begin with someone who's interested in being a candidate?
You know, when I first started at the Victory Fund, which is about a year and a half ago now, one of the very first things I did is went through this training. It's our sort of our signature training for candidates, and not only candidates, but people who want to work on the campaign of openly gay candidates. It is really an intense 4-day laboratory style class where we take people through the nuts and bolts of a campaign. One way I describe it is, you know, campaigning politics is both art and science. Everybody understands the art of it, which is campaigning and sort of the romantic view of what a campaign is. Balloons and shaking hands and kissing babies and giving speeches. The reality is there's another side to politics, which is the science of it. This course teaches people the sort of hard and cold truth about campaigning, what it takes to win. And there's a lot that people never, ever would think goes into a campaign on that side of it that really is the most important part of it, is the part that determines who's going to win. A lot of people come to us on the Victory Fund side and ask for our endorsement. And one of the first things we'll ask them is, would you consider going through this training first, if they haven't run for office before? And some of them are reluctant because they think, well, you know, I'm popular in my community and people like me and everyone tells me I'm going to win if I run. But we impress upon them until you really understand what it means to run and to win, you really can't imagine it. And people come out of it, and I believe when I was listening to Howard, he described it pretty well. He came out with a newfound appreciation for what it takes. And the interesting part of it is some people come out like Howard, pumped and ready to work and ready to run. And other people leave and say, you know what, I had no idea this is what it took, and it's not for me. So it's a really good way to sort of to weed out people who should be running and people who shouldn't.
I agree. That's the other result of it's not for me is just as valid as it is for me. Obviously, we want to have, if we're going to do anything, we have to do it ourselves. We want people who are able to get through it. I noticed one of the statements that was made in the training in some of the material I've looked through is a personal assessment of, you know, about your past and anything that you might have in your past because the Republicans. Now, you know, I understand we're putting, you know, the LGBT folks in office, and I understand that a lot of them feel that they want to take the Republican Party back from these well, I don't have many good words to say, but from these people, shall we say, do you deal very often with elections that involve gay Republicans or lesbian Republicans?
It is certainly the minority, I'll say the vast minority of our endorsements. It's just a little harder for Republicans to get through their primary processes and to sort of get the backing of their party. One place where that was an exception in this cycle was in Columbus, Ohio, where there was a Republican who got the backing of his party for a spot on the Columbus City Council, which is 100% Democrat. So it was a long shot, and he was not successful, but we did endorse him. And there have been a couple of other, there were three or four endorsed Republicans in this cycle. But we work closely with the Log Cabin national leadership structure too, and that's one way that they're trying to change their party is by getting gay Republicans to run for office. They've been great in partnering with us on trainings and things of that nature. But it is still overwhelmingly Democrats, both who are endorsed by us and elected eventually.
Well, it's just, for me, you know, I spend so much time talking about the evil things the Republican Party does. It's hard for me to imagine a good Republican, but if there was ever a good Republican, it's probably a Log Cabin one, is all I can say to you. Certainly they've been kicked around enough to get it.
You know, I have some friends for Republicans. It sounds like Republicans talking about gay people. I have a number of good friends here in Washington who are Republicans, and they've had a really hard time of it in this administration, explaining to their friends why they're still Republicans. But, I believe in a bipartisan approach to the issues that are important to the LGBT community, and I think we are not going to win solely with Democrats because, half the country isn't. If there are good people of goodwill who believe that they can help our movement, I think we shouldn't worry about what party they're in. I myself am a Democrat, but Victory Fund and the Leadership Institute are both nonpartisan organizations, and we're looking for people who believe that they can help. Beyond certain issues, it's just incumbent upon people to do what they can within their own power structures to help us advance, and I think people can do that no matter what party they're in.
Well, you're certainly in a better position to know than I would be, because I'll have to be honest with you, I've not had a Log Cabin Republican on the show. It seems to me, though, that I should. And in fact, I believe I'll have to surf the victoryfund.org. By the way, the site, folks, is victoryfund.org. That's victory, FUND.org. We are publishing that link in the chat room. It's actually at strictlyconfidentialradio.com if you'd like to stop by the site. I strongly encourage you to. You'll get a idea very quickly of what's going on around the country. But I really should have a Log Cabin Republican on the show. You know, people tend to beat up things they don't know, and obviously I don't know a lot about that. So, we've just come through the an election. You know, the November, early November is fairly huge. So you're not only coming off a very busy time, you're going into the conference, which is another busy time. How did we fare in the elections that just went down in November?
We had 71 endorsed candidates in 2007. And so far, 41 of them have won their elections. And I say so far because we still have three or four that are outstanding. One, they're doing recounts, and then three others, they're still runoffs to go. So at the very least, we'll have 41 of 71 victorious, which is about average for an odd-numbered year when there aren't federal elections. That compares with last year where we had 88 endorsed and 67 won. So it was a fairly good showing. There are the offices where people are running in the odd years tend to be more municipal than statewide or federal. So we are making smaller gains, but still important ones. There were the mayor of Ferndale, Michigan, now openly gay. The mayor of Maywood, New Jersey, now openly gay. There were a number of city councils that have their very first openly gay city council people. Duluth, Minnesota is one of them. Jeffrey Anderson. Excuse me. Certainly Doraville, Georgia is one of them. And these are places where people just being themselves, being unafraid, can really make a difference. I was struck by Howard, by your conversation with Howard, where he was talking about the fact that his sexual orientation did not come up in his race for Birmingham Board of Education. And one of the things he didn't say, but I thought to myself, well, the reason is because Howard is about as out as you can be. He has been a gadfly in that state for years as a chair of Equality Alabama, and so involved and so outspoken and in the press that certainly if people were going to choose something to pick on Howard, Howard Bayless about or to try to bring him down, it's not because he is closeted. It's because he's out there as out and loud and proud as anybody could be. And when he ran for school board, what could they say about that?
Well, he was a delightful guest. He had me in stitches at one point. He said, if you Google my name, it's just going to come up big queer. And I thought, okay, I am following you now, Howard. I understand. Oh, what a delightful person he was.
I tell you, when if the history of the gay civil rights movement in the South is written, he will be one of the big names. He is a trailblazer and has been for a long time.
Well, he's a very interesting person. It's certainly a very sincere person, a great sense of humor. I'm noticing amongst the polls, the actual percentage of votes that went toward candidates that you endorsed, when they win, they tend to win pretty big. 70%, 80% in their favor. That's interesting. Does that have to do with the district that they're in or with the seat they're running for? Or am I putting this together? Tell me about that.
It does. A lot of our candidates, their real race is in the primary. So they tend to come from a progressive district to start with. And then, so what they've got to do is win their primary, and then a lot of the time there are no surprises on election day. One example is Pittsburgh has their first openly gay city council person, and Bruce Krause. We really spent a lot of time and energy and money on his primary race, and he ousted an incumbent who was backed by the Democratic Party machine and was dealt with some really, really nasty anti-gay campaigning towards the end. Not just campaigning, but crime. There were bricks thrown through windows and leafleting in front of Catholic churches, and it got very ugly. But he handily beat his Democratic incumbent that he was running against, because I think people were just fed up with that sort of politicking. And then in the general election, he faced only token opposition because Republicans tend not to win that seat that he was running for. So. That happens a lot, where our toughest opponents tend to be in the primary, and unless there is a nonpartisan election like we saw in Fort Worth, Texas, where we still have a runoff election to go.
Regarding endorsing a candidate, what is the process? How would one contact you, and what is the criteria? How do you base it on points? Do they talk about their lives? Is it a questionnaire? What is your criteria? It seems to be that would be a tough one.
It's a fairly extensive and time-consuming process, and people are surprised when they first apply that we want to know so much about them and so much about their campaign plans. Some may even find it invasive, but the reason that we do that is because we have a national network of donors, and they wait to see who we endorse when they decide where they're going to spend their political dollars. So we want to be able to put people up in front of our donors who have been thoroughly vetted, and by that we want to make sure that this is not sort of a quixotic run for office, that they have experience, they have deep roots in their community. People know who they are. They have a plan to win. They have a plan to raise money. They have a media plan. And they're serious about this. We're not in the business of stroking people's ego who have fantasies about running for office. We're in the business of winning. And unless we think somebody has a viable shot at winning, we're not going to endorse them. And we've been criticized for that in the community. There are people who think we should endorse any gay person who seeks our endorsement. But we think of ourselves more of as a professional political organization. We think that the community, the movement, deserves one. And we're not here just to make ourselves feel better. It's really to produce results. And so that process is as vigorous, I think, as it should be.
Well, I have to agree with your take on it. Certainly, there are only so many dollars to go around, and certainly they shouldn't be spent on what would look like a hopeless race. And, you know, I get it about why some people would think it's intrusive. I mean, obviously, you have to know everything they did since they were 12, pretty much, to have a clue as to what's going to come out. And speaking of funding and so many dollars to go around, how do you do your funding? I've noticed that some of your donors are fairly are very generous. Like, you know, some anonymous gifts are fairly large. And do you do grassroots fundraising also, or is it primarily wealthier LGBT folks? I don't understand how you do funding. Nothing's free.
Right. We actually do two things for candidates. We are a political action committee, so we can give them a check from our PAC. Up to the amount that's allowed in their local jurisdiction. Sometimes there's unlimited. You can do unlimited, and sometimes it's very small limits. California, for instance, has very small limits that people can accept from PACs and individuals. The other thing we do is we will bundle for candidates. So our donors, you know, let's say there is a $500 limit on an individual gift to a campaign. We can ask our donors to give as much as they can, and if there are a number of people giving $500 through our website, it is still going directly into the candidate's account, but we are able to tap a network that they don't have access to typically. So there's bundling and there's the individual PAC checks. In terms of raising money for the fund itself so that we can write these PAC checks, we get them from large donors and small donors. We do the same thing that everybody does in trying to raise money for their nonprofit, which is, you know, direct mail and the people who bother you at dinner time on the phone, and there are, you know, email campaigns and what have you. But we will beg, borrow, and steal to get money to fund the PAC to help races that need it most.
Well, one thing I will say about looking through, you're very open about your numbers and about how much is spent of your income toward the candidates versus how much it costs to run the organization. Apparently, you're incredibly efficient. It seems to me that the huge bulk of the money does go to the candidates and their campaigns.
That's right. We have one of the lowest, I know of, we have one of the lowest administrative and fundraising costs among LGBT nonprofits. I think it is in the neighborhood of 18% of all money raised goes to administrative and fundraising costs, and the rest of it is directly spent on programs. We're lucky, and we have a pretty substantial impact for an organization of our size in terms of employees. We have about 16 staff in Washington, and that's it. Everybody else is a board member and volunteers, so we're happy that we